Tomaso con Salsa, la voz de un pueblo nuevo, 34 años de patria y cultura. Rubén, let's talk about your new CD, because this, I believe, and as surprised as I always am with what you produce, because it's always sort of like coming from left field, if you will, in the sense that people have a sort of like, this is what he's going to do, and then it's not what people are expecting. This one in particular is totally off the radar screen as to what anyone would have imagined would be your latest production. How did this come about? Because it's got some uniqueness, which we'll drill down into, but how did it come about? Cantares el Subdesarrollo.
When I was doing, between 1997 and 2003, I did three albums. You know, 1996 and 2003, 7 years, I did three albums. And the first album I did was La Rosa de los Vientos, which is the title of a song written by Romulo Castro, who, by the way, is now pre-nominated in a Grammy. I hope if your voters are listening, if you can consider listen to it. It's Panamanian music, and Romulo is a very good composer. Romulo Castro. He wrote this song, La Rosa de los Vientos. Entonces, I wanted to do an album in Panama, because we never had an album recorded in Panama fully, with Panamanian musicians, Panamanian songs, Panamanian engineer, Panamanian studio, Panamanian composers, arrangers. And it was also an album of fusion. I wanted to do fusion and try to get elements that before had not been presented to become a part of what I was doing and to present them myself. Be sort of like the conduit, as it were. For Panamanian composers, singers, and whatnot, I only sang two songs on the record. I only wrote two songs on the record. And I sang the rest, but the rest were written by other people. So it was a fusion type of experimentation, not only sound-wise, but in terms of the material and the contributions and whatnot. The album won a Grammy, but beyond the fact that it won a Grammy, it was my way of saying to all the Panamanian musicians, my colegas, my peers, I will never forget, nor will I ever not help those who are part of me, of my life, of my background. You know? And then in 1998, I began to work in something more ambitious with a trio who came from Costa Rica, Editus Trio. Three guys, Ricardo Ramirez on violin, Edin Solis guitar, and Tapao on percussion. And they added other guys to this project that we called Tiempos. And that's how I met Lalo Rojas, and I met Walter Flores, and Marcos Navarro. I got a Panamanian guy came over also and helped me with the guitar. Marco Linares. And put on Bones. So we did this mix again. It was fusion again. Very interesting. And some people didn't like it because it wasn't... I mean, some people expect you to do the same thing over and over and over. I'm not interested in that. I'm interested in trying to do things that interest me, basically. So that was fusion. And then came the third record, which was even more complicated and more ambitious than the other two. And this one was called Mundo. Oh, and I forgot to say, the Tiempos album also won a Grammy in its category, which was different from the Grammys category that was won in 97 with La Rosa de los Vientos. And then Mundo comes out, and that one is even more complicated because now I have Eric Rigler from Bad Haggis, which is a Irish Scottish type of sound and band, and he's playing Irish bagpipes and Uilleann bagpipe and Scottish bagpipe, and Bocalibre, who comes from Brazil and is doing vocals, you know, harmonies and four part harmonies, and the Boca en Boca, where these singers from Cordoba, Argentina, who come in, Luba, who also records, Editus Ensemble. So all of a sudden we have like all of these people working, and we're recording in Costa Rica, we're recording in Rio, and we're recording in Panama. We have the brothers Cruz, and then all of a sudden we have all these people. And that was a very complex fusion. Some great examples are, again, Primigenio, which should have been called Primigenio. We call it Primogenio. I made a mistake. Primigenio, que es Primogenio. And then Walter Flores and Bochinches, for instance. Danny Boy, which is probably the only version of Danny Boy ever recorded with Cuban drumming. So that won 2 Grammys in 2 different categories. So from 97 to 2003, I won 4 Grammys in 4 different categories, which is kind of odd. And it all had to do with fusion. So while I was recording Mundo in all these places in 2002, I had been sensitive to the fact that people were saying, you know, this guy is no longer doing salsa. He's no longer doing Afro-Cuban music. This guy is going somewhere else with this. And every single time I heard that, it pissed me off because it's almost as if you were like trying to abandon ship. You know? Is this nonsense discussion of whether my name is Blades or Blades? You know, my grandfather's English. It's Blades. In Panama, you got a lot of people. Rod Carew, you know, Panameño. Mauricio Smith, Panameño. You know what I mean? So anyway, Ruben Blades, but people call me Blades. I don't have a problem with that. I have a problem when people think that it's Blades and I'm trying to make it sound like Anglo by saying Blades. That is what pisses me off. So at the end of the day, just call me Ruben or Blades or Blades. I don't care. But don't argue with my sincerity or my honesty in that area. So anyway, so we're hearing from people saying, oh, he doesn't care about something. It's almost as if you're trying to move to somewhere else. I don't know where. And I figured now I'm going to do this album and I'm going to do this very basic record where all the stuff that I've heard others do and I want to do too. I've always wanted to play bongos, but nobody in their right mind was going to put me in their band to play bongos, you know. So no, we like you, but you know, we can't give you, but no, put a bongo player there, you know. Take the bongos away from Mr. Blades Blades and take that cowbell away from him before he hurts himself. So I'm thinking, I can play cowbell. I've done this before. And I play bongos, but in my house. So I figured, because I learn the basics. I'm not a great bongo player. I know the basics. Not to embarrass me or not confuse the people who are around me. Because that's something my dad, who was a bongo player, told me. Don't ever, ever, ever pick an instrument unless you're invited. And or unless you know what you're going to do with it. Okay? So that's why when you hear, I'm very proud of my baqueteo, you know, the way I'm marking tiki tuku tiki paka tiki. The hand is not leaving the hide. It's not like somebody said, my dad used to watch the guys and said, these guys look like parece que estuvieran cosiendo, you know, like it looks like they're knitting something because they're lifting their hand from the cuero. In those days, you had to keep the hand down. That's how my dad taught me to do it. Keep the hand down. Make pressure on the cuero so you can get the sound. in those days when he played, they didn't have the iron means of tuning. They put lit candles under the height so it, the cuero would go up. And then when they would go down, they lit fire under the cuero so it would go up. That's how old this guy is. So anyway, so I figured, okay, I'm going to play bongos. I'm going to play bell. It's my record, so I can do whatever I want. I can embarrass myself with my own stuff. So I got the maraca, I got the climb. And then I thought, Cheo Feliciano, who's not only have been my idol, but also is a very good friend and somebody I always will have tremendous affection and respect for. Cheo, a long time ago, I said to me, you know, Ruben, you should just play with the guitar, man. Why don't you just take the guitar? Forget the bands and stuff. Just take the guitar and you do it. You know, because the song, when you sing the songs in the guitar by yourself, it's a lot stronger than when you have the band. So, and my dad used to tell me also, why don't you sing more boleros? Why don't you use the guitar? You know, use the guitar. It's stronger. But anyway. The thing is, I thought, well, I'm going to use the guitar, and I'm going to play the guitar. And I'm going to play acoustic guitar, nylon strings, but I'm also going to play acoustic guitar with steel strings. And I'm also going to play acoustic 12-string steel guitar. And Larry Bresner, who's a producer, agent in New York and L.A. He's basically now in L.A. He used to represent Billy Crystal. He used to represent Robin Williams. And he loves Latin music. He's always been in love with Latin music. And Larry had gotten me a Cuban tres guitar, a real Cuban tres guitar, which he gave me years ago, and I had it in the house, and it was I couldn't even tune it because the cuerda, the strings were old and rusty, and I was afraid of playing it because I get a cut in these strings, man, I want to lose my fingers, you know, I'm going to get gangrene or something because these things are old and rusty, so I couldn't even tune it properly. And I never got around changing the strings, but I found it and I took it out and I went bing bing and I said, yeah, I can use this. So I used that too and I played that. Then I played clave, of course, maracas. Then I bought a bass. I bought a bass guitar. And, I figured, well, I'll do this. It's acoustic. So I'm going to put the bass guitar. But then I asked Walter Flores, who's a piano player for Editus Ensemble, and he has his own band now, Son de Tiquicia, from Costa Rica. Walter is not only a great piano player, but he plays flute, but he's also a great arranger, and he knows about recording and all that. He's an engineer as well. So he flew over to Los Angeles, and he helped me buy the basic rudiments for a recording studio and four channel track and then bounce stuff, one mic, couple of amps, and he said, let's go. And so he set all that up.
We're listening to Ruben Blades talking about his recording Cantares del Subdesarrollo from Boston University. This is 90.9 WBUR-FM Boston and 1240 WBUR-AM West Yarmouth, also broadcasting 91.5 WSA Sandwich and 90.3 WCCT Harwich, WBUR Boston, Cape Cod and the Islands, and worldwide at WBUR.org. Continuamos con nuestra entrevista con Ruben Blades, hablando de su nueva propuesta musical, Cantares del Subdesarrollo. We continue with our interview with Ruben Blades, talking about his new compact disc, Cantares del Subdesarrollo.
And when he was there, I said to him, why don't you put the bass on just as a reference, you know, because I'm going to put the bass, and I probably will put the bass in another version of this record, because we're going to have different versions in different countries. Even this cover that we have for Puerto Rico, it'll be gone in December. If you don't get the record now, with the inside of it, where it has Ismael Rivera, Tita Cure Alonso, and Rey Barreto, for Puerto Rico, you're not going to get it, because I'm going to take it out and never to be placed out again with this cover and this stuff. So Walter put on the bass, and then I use a sampling of a conga from Mark Quiñones to sort of orient me when I was playing the guitar. Just a very simple forward track of something that we had done with Mark, I don't know when, maybe with Mundo. And then there was a guaguancó that had been recorded by the Cruz brothers from Panama that I had when they were backing up Luba in some song that Luba had done. So I said, well, you know, I was going to play congas as well at one point. And I was going to find a quinto and play. But then I had that. And so I said, okay, let's use this for the time being, so to give me the frame so I can work the song. So I used all of that, and then I started putting the vocals down. This is 2002. 2003 came, and I revisited what I had and sort of checked it out and played it for the guys. And it was very encouraging what I received from the guys, because I wanted, these are demos, basically. All these records are demos. They were done. They're not like I wanted something really, really bare bone in your face. This is the way it is. I did not want a big production elaborated, oh, the mistake here, oh, this is a little out of tune over there. I said, like, no, this is, like, going to be straightforward. The sonels you hear and all this stuff, that's what I did. That's what I did when I did it. I didn't go back and redo them. I think in Segunda Mitad del Noveno, I think I redid a couple of things at one point during those years. Came back and did something because I didn't like something, which is the only song, I think. And I did two versions of Símbolo, one for Panama and one for everyone. But all the sonels and all the stuff you're listening to, that's what I did. I mean, my whole feeling was this album has to come out almost as if I was a live, immediate album, and I'm not going to be doing take two. Nothing. This is it. If it's, you know, and basically because I thought these are demos. And then when I played them for Oscar Hernandez, Ralph Irizarry, and Mike Viñas from Seda Solar, I played them because I wanted them to do the charts for this record. So this would have been the album that we would have come up with now. And when they heard it, when they heard this record, and there's like two or three or four songs that are not there that I didn't include on the record and the thing I've done. When they heard it, they went like, we're not going to do charts for this. Leave it like that because it's very strong. If you make charts of this, you're going to change it. Just leave it. And I said, really? That's so odd. They're talking themselves out of a job. And they felt so strongly that there was something very visceral and very truthful and very strong that they said in this record, as it was, they said, no, we're not going to do, you shouldn't do this. Leave it like that. Do not, and that's what I did. And I didn't put it out in 2004 up till now because I was working in Panama in the public service, and I didn't feel that it was the proper thing to do to put out an album that was going to generate attention. I was not going to go on tour because I could not do that. I would only have 4 weeks holiday a year. I'm sorry. So I said, I'm not going to, you know, so I kept it away. And now I'm putting it out because I did my 5 years of public service, which I finish, it started in September 2004 and I finished June 30th of 2009 at 12 a.m. I was done.
Rubén Blades, Cantares del Subdesarrollo, su nueva propuesta musical, la cual estarán escuchando aquí en el programa Con Salsa. Rubén, you mentioned that Walter went with you while you were in Los Angeles in your home, picked up the equipment. You already had some basic tracks that were your guide, but you wound up recording this not in a fancy Sunset Strip recording studio. This was in the garage of your home.
Yeah. Again, you know, there are all these myths, you know, you have to, you need to isolate the sound and you need to, you know, to do this and you need to do that. And I actually came up and said, you know what, can we do it here? And he said, sure. It's on top. It's not even the garage. On top of the garage, there's a room that is filled with the remnants of 61 years of not throwing things away. I don't know if people, you're listening, if you are born and raised in a working class family and you have a numerous family, members of your family are more than two, you know that we don't throw away anything. Everything has a purpose and something can be recycled, whereas your sister's gonna get your brother's pants or your brother's gonna end up, you know, inheriting your older brother's books. But you know that we do not throw away anything. So in that garage is filled with books and all kinds of things. I mean, every so often I go in there and it's like, wow, you find things that you didn't even remember you had. And that's where Walter and I did the, that there are actually several pictures of the, I call it La Cloaca because, cloaca was the term the Romans gave to the sewers. So, I call it La Cloaca, you know, Cloaca Studios, you know, sewer studios, because it's just, you know, it's anything but what a studio should be. The other funny thing that I'm going to tell you this, although I don't know if you're going to ask me about this, as you notice, there's a dog in the recording, and the way the dog came about is that there was a dog next door, and around where I live, for some reason, the planes, small planes go up, you know. And every time small planes go above the area, the neighborhood, the dog began to cry every time he heard the plane. Woo! Oh! You know. And I thought that was very, you know, I mean, sad as it was for the poor dog, I mean, I thought it was very funny. So I recorded the dog. And then I started to think about what would that be in the neighborhood. And Maestra Vida, Solar de los Aburridos, Sal Si Puedes, Hispania place. So that's where I met the thing. And the guy says, you know, hey, take that dog and put it in that plane. And maybe the stewardess will give it some food. Meaning, you know, you don't feed your dog and, you know, treat your dog right. And every time the dog listens to the plane, he wants to get out of this house and go somewhere where they would treat him better than you do. And the dog is, woo. And then later on, I started making up the dog. So the dog is here and the dog is there. He's trying to bite this guy. So anyway, so we did the whole thing at the garage on top of the garage. And that's where we recorded everything. And then one day I went to the bathroom, and when I came back, Walter had put on a flute in one song, in Olaya. And then, which, by the way, Olaya is the name of a girl that I once met in San Sebastian. If she's listening to this at some point, she's gonna laugh because I said, I'm gonna title the song after you, Olaya. It's a Basque name of this girl that I met in San Juan, in Spain, in San Sebastian, years ago. And I loved the name. I thought it was, she was helping us in some visit that we had done there. And her name was Olaya. And I thought it was such a Caribbean sounding name to be in San Sebastian. So I said, I made a note of it. I said, I'm going to use that name. That name is wonderful. And she thought, you know, yeah, all right, you're going to use it in a song. And she's going to really be surprised. Years later, she's going to see that she has a song. So anyway, so he put down the flute and then he asked me, what do you think? I said, I think it's fine. Just leave it there. So that's why the flute kind of snuck in with Walter Flores.
My name is Jose Maso. You're listening to Constanza. During this hour, we continue our interview with Ruben Blades, which took place a week ago this past Friday in his apartment in the Lower East Side of, actually, Lower West Side of New York City, in which he talks about his new compact disc, Cantares del Subdes. Bueno, mi gente, estamos escuchando una entrevista con Ruben Blades hablando sobre su nueva propuesta musical, Cantares del Subdesarrollo, que fue lanzado hace un par de semanas. Actualmente lo pueden conseguir por medio de iTunes, también en la página de rubenblades.com, como también Amazon. Pueden bajar y comprar, obviamente, el disco compacto. Si están en Puerto Rico, lo pueden conseguir en 5. Vamos a continuar con nuestra entrevista con Ruben Blades. Let's continue with our interview with Ruben Blades. We're talking with Ruben Blades, his new CD, Cantares del Subdesarrollo. As you mentioned before, it's only available via iTunes or on the internet, Amazon.com. And of course, you can go to RubenBlades.com and order it from there as well. But if you're in Puerto Rico, you'll get the physical CD, which is being sold as we speak, and it's quickly becoming a collector's item and quickly selling as well. Before we talk about your aspirations for this CD, because you had mentioned there in one of your interviews that your hope was that the audience in Puerto Rico would not only receive it well, but that they would support it by buying it, and that you would show that there is still a market for quality recordings and that there's no need to be thinking about getting it in other ways, but that you can buy a good product at a good price, because it is for a good price in the stores that are selling in Puerto Rico. Before we speak about your aspirations as to the sales, let's talk a little bit about, you tied this, as you were talking, you mentioned Solar de los Aburridos, Maestra Vida, so there's a continuation, because you spoke about the three CDs, Rosa de los Vientos, you spoke about Tiempos, you spoke about Mundo, and they have that fusion sound, and there is some link, there's a tie between those three. But this one has a tie to other things you've done, and in particular, Maestra Vida.
What happens, basically, is every writer has a possibility of creating their own background for the characters that they come up with. And if I can tell you that all the work that I have done since the moment I began composing has taken place in an area, and although never have I made this public, the songs and the characters are all taking place in this particular dimension, as it were. So that in the case of for instance, in the case of García Márquez, he called it Macondo, you know, and there is a background for that, as far as he was placing many of his short stories in this place. William Faulkner called his Yoknapatawpha County. And I thought, and it's very interesting, because Gabriel recognized the fact that he had come up with this notion of placing all his characters in one area because of Faulkner, Yuknapataufa comedy that I just mentioned. What that does is that it provides you with an anchor for the events. It frees you from the rigidity of reality. It allows you to apply imagination to a series of characters and events that, although are somehow a product of reality, are very, very much a part of fiction. So every single thing that I've done since 1969 is located in this place. Hispania is the country. It's the Solar de los Aburridos, the Sal Si Puedes is the place. And Solar de los Aburridos is the place. So what I'm doing now is I'm beginning to tie the events so that a lot of the songs that I've been writing since I was, I don't know, 16, I was 20 years old, they were not obviously connected, but they are connected. They are connected. The thing is that I myself even didn't quite understand where these things were going to go to, any more than you know what your life is going to be like when you're no longer 21, when you're 61. You don't even know if you're going to live that long. I never thought I would live to be this old. When I was growing up, I never thought I was going to be 61, which is also another reason why I never thought about children and stuff. I didn't think I was going to live this old, this age. I was sickly when I was a kid. And perhaps that's another reason that explains why I've wanted to do so many things in so short a time. And I ended up, you know, thank God, succeeding. And much to my surprise, I'm still around. But I had an urgency, which led me to try things and do it on my time and skew responsibilities in any kind of thing that could hold me down, because I didn't think I was going to have the time to do these things. So now I'm beginning to look at everything and beginning to see what are the holes in the narrative. In this Cantare de su Desarrollo, there are certain hints already about certain things that have to do with setting up the explanation for events that took place in other recordings. For instance, there's a seemingly unconnected song there, El Himno de los Olvidados. But if you pay attention, you will notice that there is a, when they start singing, there's an interruption by someone who's calling Ramiro. He's calling Ramiro, Ramiro, Ramiro. And he says, "What are you doing?" And he says, "Well, we're singing." He says, "What, singing what, communist songs? You know, it's 3 a.m. You know, you get up here, I'm going to tell your mother about this nonsense." And if you know the background of who Ramiro may be, then you would assume that's the one that's talking is his father, Carmelo. And if you listen to Maestra Vida on the second album, Maestra Vida, you will find that when Carmelo dies, Ramiro arrives late to the burial. You will find that when, and you will find that when Baba Quiñones is having those drinks with his son and Ramiro's son, as he gets progressively drunker, he begins to talk about his Ramiro's reputation and saying, "I really didn't like him, and he had been in jail." You know, he begins to say certain things, and it was never explained. So all of a sudden, now you have a situation where you can begin to sort of interpret, where did Ramiro go with this? Because when he was like 15, he was singing these songs that are revolutionary kind of songs, enough for his father to interpret them as leftist songs. And then, you know, where did that go from there? I mean, for instance, I can tell you Ramiro sings Pai Portátil, for instance. You know, it would be a Ramiro singing it. So you know where this is going. And eventually, you will not be surprised then to find the tensions between Ramiro and Carmelo and his father. And then you begin to understand where other elements that are still not clear are in fact related. Because all the characters, from Pablo Puello to Juan Amayo to whatnot, all of them are a part of a story. And because they're a part of a story of a place, there are moments where they're inexorably linked to a larger story. And what I'm doing now is I'm beginning to decipher and make the connections between characters so that people begin to understand things and will begin to look at the whole work in a whole different light. Okay? Because things that you thought were random are in reality, there's a background. There's something happened. Or it created something that was reflected upon in a different time and a different song. I always tell people, it's like I was painting with these songs. Each song is a color and a shape. But because I've been painting out of sequence, it was really not possible to understand the canvas until the connections began to be made. So now I'm taking all the 200 and more songs that I've done and begin to make the connections. And this record and the next album that I do will serve as connectors. And that's why Cantar de su Desarrollo is a part of the Maestra Vida saga in a much more specific way. Because you got Babá Quiñones as a narrator, he's talking and sort of saying things here and there. But I think that as the next records come, the whole saga will become more and more apparent in terms of its detail.
But from the compact disc that we're listening to tonight, a special dedicated to Rubén Blades' new CD, his first in 5 years or more, it's titled Cantares del Subdesarrollo. We interviewed him in English so that you could hear what he has to say and share with you his thoughts with regards to this recording. I asked Rubén about the different characters that come out from this new recording, in which it's a continuation of Maestra Vida, and his answer to that was,
that was the idea. And there's another thing that now, because of what I did with Alan Garcia in the guitar, I've gotten a lot of people coming forward and saying, you know what, you should do this, do a whole guitar acoustic album. And do it just like you did. Just pick up the guitar, play the song directly. And other people said, do that and also make little movies of each song. And so that's something that is interesting to consider. The characters are there. You can hear people talking. I wanted to do it that way to create like a background so that the immediacy of the street honest no big production became so apparent as things are in the streets, the way that things are expressed, basics. Like, you know, you're in a house or you're playing and people are around you, they're listening to what you're doing, or you're outside in el patio. You're in the patio with where they hang out the clothes, and it's in the afternoon, and everybody took all the clothes away, and now the night is coming in, and that fresh breeze is coming from the ocean, and you're feeling it, and you're in the patio, and you're having a little rum, and you're playing, and people are talking, and dog is barking, and there's a little light coming from someplace, and that is sort of illuminating the cracks in the wet, you know, patio. And so with the trees and the tree and the jasmine planted in the pots, and you know that, so and the kids running, and so you have that, and then you begin to sort of understand who these people are and where they come from. The songs themselves, like La Calle, you know, the first part of La Calle is the kids are talking about how the street doesn't forgive, the street doesn't take prisoners. The second part of the song is really the older guys saying, whatever happened to those guys who talk that way, basically? You know, because it's almost as if you have one generation in front of the other. You know, the one generation is telling the younger generation is telling the old generation how the neighborhood streets are, as if these guys didn't know what they are like. And they're just listening, and they're not saying anything. When the guys leave, one of them gets up and says, whatever happened to those guys who, you remember those guys who talked that way? They all ended up dishonoring our corner. And today, we don't even remember what their nicknames were. You know, we took their teeth out. We took their chains out. We took their collars out. You know, and these streets are like shrinking. They're like pages that are shrinking as the years go by. And these pages are written in a language that can never be understood by strangers. And we may have been born from a lot of different mothers, but we're all brothers here. And on these streets, death and life, they dance with a beer in their hand. You know, and basically that's what the older guys are saying. And then the chorus comes in and says, I'm from here, from the ones who survived. Which at the end of the day, the guy is saying, we survived. I very, very much doubt you will. He's what's telling these kids. And in segunda mitad, el noveno, what they have seen, what they have seen is one of these guys gets shot. Because in la cita, one guy is telling the other, where are you? You know, you were supposed to come, and you big shot, you didn't come. You're a coward, you know, blah, blah, blah. That guy gets shot. In la segunda mitad del noveno, the older guys are watching TV in a bar, and they're watching an old video of one of the World Series games that in my time, my generation, 1960, 59, were narrated by none other than Buck Cannell, whom I believe was a Cuban, and Cuban national, and Monsieur La Cavalerie, who was from Venezuela, and Felo Ramirez, who was also from Venezuela. Those were the guys who were talking, narrating the games. You know, I didn't hear the game in English. I heard it in Spanish. La Serie del Caribe from whatever country it was that was being played in La Serie Mundial. Para pa para ra, 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 la Calgata Deportiva Gillette trae la incidencia de la Serie del Caribe. So they're watching a video of that, and by watching the video now, they're older, and they think of when they were kids, and then the shots ring, and they get out of the place, of the bar. And when they come out, the guy's dead in the street. so that when they come back to the bar and they sit down, the game and the whole thing has changed. The perspective, their perspective now is totally different. What they're saying is, man, this is the second, this is the bottom of the ninth, and nobody knows what to do anymore, you know, and all our heroes are gone with our youth. They just left and took our youth with them. And there's hunger on first, fear on second, anger on third, you know, and, you know, if, now that I need you, where are you, Bob Canel? And where are you, Monsieur La Cavalerie? You know, because those were the guys where everything was right. Everything was right. Just follow the game. You watch the game. It's fair. He has a referee with rules and the umpire. I'm sorry. The umpire has rules. You're not supposed to do this. You know, you can't steal first. You know what I mean? You got to get the first. And in order to get the first, you got to do this. You have a shot at it. You know. It was a game with rules, and there was a home, you know, to go to. And now this whole thing has gone, God knows where. And that's why Segunda Mitad Noveno goes from a memory of a baseball game from the 1960s that they've been watching on TV as one of those classic shows that reminds them of when they were kids and people were not killing each other on the streets, when they were children and when children didn't kill children on the street. And the neighborhood was like a hand, not like a bunch of fingers, just pointing at each other, but not working together. You know, that is what the song is about. And that's why I used the metaphor of the bottom of the ninth, because we either win or lose. I mean, this is it. This is probably one of the last chances we're going to get to make things work. So, and as you see, there's a lot of stuff in here that maybe some people won't get right away. But you got to use your imagination, which is another thing that I've always encouraged audiences to do. You know, that's one of the reasons also why I don't like to do videos, because, for instance, if I do a video of Pedro Navaja, I would have forced everyone to identify Pedro in racial terms or physical terms. I'd rather that if you are Oriental and you're listening to Pedro Navaja, well, Pedro's Oriental just like you are. And if you're black, he's black. And if you're not, then you're not. And if he's white, he's white. And if he's brown, he's brown, and whatever. And he's dressed any way you want it. The hat, whatever color you want. You know what I mean? So that's, I hope that people use their imagination. And I'm just giving you some background so that when you listen to the record, you understand it's just not a bunch of songs sort of put in together. There's an argument in there. And it's a very strong argument, because it has to do with the disillusion of a generation and the responsibility that we have to face this and see what it is that we can do as members of a community and as members of the human race. What is it that we can do to change this? Because this is happening here. It's happening in Darfur. It's happening in Latin America. It's happening in the States. It's happening in China. It's happening all over the place. So the question is, as Albert Camus once said as well, is what is our responsibility in the face of murder? What is it that we have to do not to accept this? Which is what we seem to be doing.
You're listening to Rubén Blades. He is our guest this evening on Con Salsa, this very special show. He's back on the scene with the tour, Todos Vuelven, and of course his new recording just came out about 2 weeks ago, Cantares del Subdesarrollo, in which you're hearing him explain some of the songs from this compact disc. There's one that you had recorded before, and it was part of the It was part of that experiment you mentioned earlier, which was an internet release of a CD that included a number of different artists. The Stutterer, which also was recorded as a bonus track with the Spanish Harlem Orchestra, their Grammy Award winning CD, Across 110th Street. So here you have another version, which I gather would be the original version, if you will, of the Stutterer. Let's talk about that, because that sort of like goes off in ways that you haven't done before. The content, the lyrics, etc.
Well, the song, The Stutterer, first of all, some people may consider it's not politically correct to write a song about someone who has a stutter, a speech impediment. And I'm going to tell you, in my neighborhood, in Calle Segunda Carrasquilla, in Panama, we had a guy who stuttered, and we all loved him very dearly. Not patronizingly. He was a guy, he was a member of our neighborhood, well respected. And so, as such, he was a protagonist of several situations. I can tell you one that, in my neighborhood, there weren't that many girls, that I know of in the whole neighborhood, and I'm talking about Calle Primera, Calle Segunda, and Calle Tercera, there were probably three girls that we knew of. We never saw them. We heard of them. They were like a myth. And there was all guys in my neighborhood. So that was one. Second, we never really got invited to parties. There was really no such thing as parties. We heard of parties somewhere else. In our neighborhood, nobody ever invited, very few people would get invited to anything. So when somebody did get invited for something, it would take all of us. I couldn't go in those days because I was the smallest one. I was like 12 years old and I wasn't allowed to go anywhere without my mom. Those were the days. Now 12-year-olds have a car and they drink and they have a key to get into the house at whatever time they want. Not in my time. So they went to some party somewhere, and one of the girls, the reason that they didn't want them there was because the boys in the neighborhood didn't want guys from a different neighborhood coming in and dancing with their girls, or whom they thought were theirs or whatever. So this girlfriend really liked my friend Alberto and Beto, and then a whole fight ensued because of that. And it was a big thing, because later on those other guys came to the neighborhood and there was a lot of problems that came up after that. But the whole point of the thing is, I always loved and laughed at the fact that Beto, who was supposedly not the sort of hunk of the neighborhood, was the guy who always ended up with the girl. And I thought that was great, and it was very strange also for everybody. I've been thinking, like, Beto was very shy, and all of a sudden Beto, who didn't even want to talk, all of a sudden he was the guy, and the girls liked him. He was a nice guy, and which he was. So anyway, I always had that in my head, And as a matter of fact, the fact that towards the end, when he's trying to explain to her that, he's really looking for a girlfriend, and he's mocked by this woman, I figured I'm going to give him the last word, which is something that you usually don't get. And the last word then is the last witty word. Because it's a thing that gets, when he said, tú te lo pipí, tú te lo pipí, tú te lo pierdes por ser tan hija de pupú, and I don't finish the word, and everybody knows what he's going to finish up saying. But the beginning of the song says, on a street that is named after a historical leader, a street that at nights is crowded with whores, with biblical names, a stutterer showed up, an unemployed stutterer showed up an Olympic optimist, with not a penny in his pocket, but with a magnificent erection. And the whole, that's one of the best, clearer, more encompassing, I think, openings of a song that I've had. It's very evocative. I remember I read it to García Márquez a long time ago, and I had the pleasure of having the maestro in my house in L.A., and his beautiful, and Mercedes, his wife, and I played it, you know, to see what the reaction, what his reaction would be. And he just laughed. And you know, and he said, you know, he just laughed. And, it's a, again, I don't know how people are going to take it. A gentleman told me that it was kind of, this album was sort of a hardcore album. But my position is this, you know, García Márquez wrote this book titled Memorias de Mis Putas Tristes. And then all of a sudden it's okay for a Nobel Prize winner in literature to use words that some people may consider offensive, although they are included in the El Diccionario de la Real Academia de la Lengua Española. You know, these are not words that I have made up. These are words that are there to be used. So when I was writing this, I thought, I'm going to write and going to try to write as close to what it is like on an A-word, you know. So, and I'm going to write again with the intention of detailing life on the in this on the street, on the neighborhood, as it happens, not a sanitized version of things. And let me try to write about stuff that has never been written before. And I'm sure that this type of episode has never been even described. And I'm sure it has happened. You know, that somebody may have gone, and I know I did, you know, that you would show up in a place and you expect somebody, you know, to be with you. And they're not going to be with you unless they can get something out of you. So I figured, you know, this is an interesting experience to write and document about, with always tongue in cheek, and put some humor, you know, on the record. So I did it before, and you know, let me just finish by saying that Pedro Arroyo from Zeta radio station in Puerto Rico, he played it. I told him, play this song about 3 years ago or 4 years ago. I said, play this song on the radio and tell me what people say. So when people heard the song and heard that I said putas in it, the puta or whatever in it, and they heard the whole thing, there was a very healthy debate on the issue of words and what to describe and what should be played on radio and what not. But it was done very in a civil way. It wasn't done, it was no witch hunt. And so it was a very interesting discussion that I'm glad I presented the opportunity to have, again, these issues and censorships and whatnot are very delicate. You have to establish some balance. But I personally think that if you don't like something, then don't listen to it. But I don't think that the fact that you don't like it should give you the right to suppress it. I don't think that's healthy, and I don't think it's the way to go.
Rubén Blades, our guest here on Con Salsa. I'm José Mazo, the very best in Afro-Latin music. Con Salsa, vos un pueblo nuevo, 34 años de patria y cultura.
Hola amigos, este es Rubén Blades. Están escuchando a José Mazó, 34 años de patria y cultura por WBUR 90.9 FM.
Rubén Blades, our guest here on Con Salsa. I'm José Mazó, the very best in Afro-Latin music. Con Salsa, vos un pueblo nuevo, 34 años de patria y cultura. Rubén, you've given us a lot of your time, so I'm just going to start wrapping this up. And as you were talking that last piece about censorship and also words, etc., it comes to mind that one of the projects that I thought this past year has been of great interest to me was your participation as a guest on Calle 13's latest CD, in which you sing a song or participate in a song titled La Perla, which in fact you sort of like sing, narrate. It's sort of like a poem, a sung poem more than anything. How did that come about, and tie that, if you will, to this whole expression that you just mentioned about expressing in words and things of that nature?
Well, the songs tend to reflect immediate aspects of life in a specific time. When they are decided upon with a commercial intention. Therefore, if something all of a sudden, and this, we have an example in Salsa Romantica. I don't know if people are aware of this, but if you go back, you're going to find that I recorded in 1974, I think it came out in 1975, a song called Paula C. with Luis Ramirez. And I don't know, I may be wrong, but check and see if before 75 you had a sort of salsa song that had been recorded romantically, up-tempo, with violins. Louis told me that I was the guy that had started all this stuff, he said to me many years later, before he passed on. And God bless him, Luis Ramirez, a tremendous musician. I worked with Luis also in Juan Pachanga and then Sin Tu Cariño. Luis wrote the music, I wrote the lyrics. So when I recorded Paula C with Luis, it was a precursor of Salsa Romantica, you know. So, but the song survived because there was an element of melody, arrangement, and lyric that transcended the moment. It wasn't copied, really. The problem with Salsa Romantica, for instance, it became the genre's staple. And all of a sudden, now everybody started just doing that, and the studios began to picking up people and putting them, they look good, and then put them there, and the same charts, and pretty much the same arrangers, and the same sound, you know. So all of a sudden, whenever you put the radio on, that's all you heard. So, a lot of younger guys, this happened after, when Fania was beginning to come down, after Fania and that boom, as some call it, began to ebb, then a new blood came, that's for sure. But the songs just sort of all went into this dead end, you know, it's like there was nothing new really happening, and pretty much everything was that. And out of the following generation went somewhere else. Some of them knew about what had happened before Salsa Romantica. They knew of Hector Lavoe. They knew of Willie Colon. They knew of Eddie Palmieri. They knew of Cortijo and Ismael to a degree, because that's even going further back. And they knew of my songs as well. So Calle 13 is one of these groups. They knew about these things, but they felt that they needed to express themselves following a different type of structure. René said something to me. He has an interview with me and his brother in Visitante, Residente Visitante, in the Panama, in RubenBlades.com, RubenBlades.com, RubenBlades.com. And I asked him, I said, what made you guys, younger generation, to go into rap or reggaeton or hip-hop or whatever that is called, as opposed to salsa? And René said to me, I can't sing. You know, and I think that was an honest answer that also typifies the honesty that this guy has when he comes up about his job. He said, Ruben, I can't sing. I can't hold notes and do a melody and stuff, but I can recite, I can speak. So therefore, rap was more attractive for people who can't really sing or carry a melody and yet they're saying things. And I told them, then I said something else. I said, sometimes the contents of what is presented, I don't like it. I do not agree with some of the contents of some of the songs, and I do not agree with some of the extremes and positions that are some people assume when they rap. I will not suppress it. I just don't agree with it. So I said, why have you considered the fact that some of the things that are being said today by some of the people that are recording, yourselves included, are going to sound to you ridiculous when you're my age or when you're 70? Because I said, I tell you that I know for a fact that you're going to have Felipe Pirela Boleros sang forever. Daniel Santos sang forever. You know, you probably will have some of my songs sung forever. But I'm sure that a lot of the material that is being presented through rap today, the people who sang, if they survive and they're 80 years old, they're not going to be cursing the police. They're going to be calling the police to try to help them. Okay? So what do you think of that? I said, I am always very much aware of the need for the song to retain its validity 40 years down the line. And he looked at me and he said, I understand what you're saying and I can appreciate that and even concur with you to a degree. But he said, but you know, when I'm your age and when I'm 70 years old or 80 years old, if I get to live that long, I don't want to be ashamed and embarrassed knowing that when I was this age, I didn't say what I was thinking. And I thought that was, again, another honest answer. Intelligent and honest. And I thought, these guys are really, they got something in between, you know, one ear and the other, you know. And some people, you put a flashlight in one ear and the light comes out, flashing out in the other. I thought, this is really interesting. So then I said to them, I said, well, I got a song, Las Calles, and I would like for you to listen to it and do something with it. Take it somewhere else. See where you take it. As it turns out, it didn't happen that way. They came to Panama, and we had met in Panama before, and they had given me a poem that they had written about La Perla. I know La Perla, and not that I'm an expert in La Perla, but I know of La Perla. I've been there. And I'm a product of the popular neighborhood, so a lot of the things that I saw in La Perla were not surprising at all. You have everything and all types of possibilities in places like that, like La Perla or Chorrillo in Panama, or, you know, Curundú or whatever in Panama. So when I read it, the poem, and I thought, I'm going to add a point of view from Panama, a point of view from my experience growing up in neighborhoods, and add it to this, because the bottom line of this is, I think, to create awareness all over Latin America of how similar our points of view are, and how similar our backgrounds are, and how similar our problems are. Therefore, how similar the solutions can result, and try to end the isolation that is a byproduct of politics or extremisms or political pressures, you know. So I wrote the lyric, and then I went to the recording, and they weren't sure what I was going to do. They had no clue what I was going to do. I just showed up, and I said, let me hear it. And they gave me the track. And I heard the track, and I measured it in my head. And then I said, go. And all I wanted to do was not compete. I mean, I wasn't going to compete with any rapper. I don't know enough to do that. Nor was that my intention. But I knew that there was a certain accent that if I had really gotten myself submerged in this, as I usually get when I'm doing something, I can guarantee you that I would have come up with something much better than what I did. But since that was not my intention, I felt I'm going to do like a Shakespearean turn in here, only using Shakespearean as an example of poetry that is recited. It could be just a poem. And which is, I think, the street does Shakespeare with these things, by the way, with rap. It's street Shakespeare. And I recited it. And I did it. I did it twice. I didn't want to do it more. And I told them I don't like to be doing things over and over. Whether it is a recording or a scene in a movie, I just don't think it loses reality. And I don't want perfection. I'm not perfect. So that's how it was done. And then they were kind of surprised, actually. And I didn't ask him anything. I mean, they were sort of stunned in a way. Like, I didn't know what this guy was going to come up, and he came up with this. So I imagine they listened to it. I said, you know, make me look smart. And I left, you know. So, and then they did it. And then I did something with them that I never do, which is usually do not do. Usually I don't do this. I did a video. But because the video was in Puerto Rico, because the video, I had the idea of going to, you know, we were supposed to go to the Cementerio en La Perla, and I said, well, let's go to Tite, because they had just released all Tite's songs, and I said, let's go take him his CD, you know. So I bought the CD, and I left it there. And it was Puerto Rico, you know, it was a whole different thing. It's like my second home, and it is my second home, and I felt just good. So I went and I did it. And out of respect for Puerto Rico and for them, basically. And the genre, in the sense that, again, if I don't like something, I don't listen to it. But it is urban music, and they have a following, and there are things that we can do that can be heard by others. And if that creates some attention and respect that may be used to give these kids and these people from all over the world a better perspective on things, then I'm going to use the opportunity to do so. And if tomorrow I have to go and argue, I will and argue, just like I did when I met with the gangs in Colón. I met in 2004. I met with all the heads of all the street gangs in Colón, because I wanted to know, what are we going to do with this nonsense of this violence? You know, and basically because of the meeting, and because it was an honest meeting, and they gave me the meeting because they believed that I wasn't going to be there and disrespect them or lie. That's how I started the program, to get gangs and people who are in high risk, social risk, young guys, into a program of adiestramiento, of teaching them to become tourist assistants, tourist guides. You know, and I started the program with 20 guys, and I had some were killed by, you know, the kind of life that they had. Some went back to jail, but about 6 survived. And they're still in the program 2-3 years later. And now before I left, we expanded the program to 100. And I hope this program continues, because it's a way of providing an opportunity for people, you know, to really change their lives. And again, it was music that allowed me to be listened to by the gangs. It was music. And the fact that they felt that I was somebody that they could respect. And if going through certain scenarios, such as art or whatever, is going to allow me to use my reputation and my experience to help people, that's what I'm going to do. I'll go wherever I have to go. Just like I spent 5 years in Panama doing what I'm doing with the social service that I just finished doing.
Ruben Blades, who has been our guest this evening on Con Salsa. You've heard from him, his thoughts and projects having to do with his work as a public servant. The tour that is currently underway, titled Todos Vuelven, and his new CD, which again, I mentioned, is available via the internet, RubenBlades.com, RubenBlades.com, Amazon, also iTunes, and if you're in Puerto Rico, you can get the hardcover and the CD in the different stores that are providing this recording, only up until the month of December, because it'll become a collector's item, and hopefully it'll become a gold selling CD, which in this term is
if you sell 10 copies, they'll give you a solid platinum statue. It's like, it's really something. It's really something with the piracy. I wrote something on the album that I said, you know, the people always talk about the corruption in government and whatnot. I said, nobody ever writes or comments on the corruption in the civilian population here. And, we are musicians. We live off our royalties. And, you know, during the 5 years that I was, working in social, doing the social work I did, in Panama, my royalties went like down to nothing. And I got people telling me, hey, I got all your records, you know, I just downloaded all your stuff on the internet, and they're very happy about this. And I just look at them and I think, you know, what, should I be offended or should I be thankful, you know? But it's work. It's part, I mean, it really bothers me that somebody would copy what I do and then go to the street and sell it for $3 because they had a hard life. And what did I get? You know, it's like, it's my job. It's my work. It's my creation, and I don't get anything. And somebody else gets all the money directly because they have needs. It's like, that's not right. There's something wrong with that. When I'm hungry, I don't walk in a restaurant and put my hand on you for what you're eating just because I'm hungry. You know, I don't pull a Christopher Columbus on your house, knock the door down and come in and say, I take this apartment for Ruben Blades, you know. It's like, no, it's your house and it's your stuff. So anyway, then that's why I'm trying to keep the prices down, because I do agree that they were just too expensive. But that's not the issue, I don't think. I think the issue is a basic issue of fairness. So that's why I wrote that. And I hope to God that we can sell this album, because in Puerto Rico, they were telling me that a big, huge hit, it's a record that sells about 40,000 copies. 40,000 copies, and it's considered a tremendous success because of piracy. And what is happening now is a lot of people, and this is what happened with Fania, actually, at one point. Because when we were getting ripped off, we stopped producing. Which is another thing that happened. A lot of people just stopped writing. So what's the point of me writing? You pay me 2 cents per cut. And on top of everything, you don't pay me? I'm not going to write anymore. And people stopped writing. And people stopped recording good things. And then, you know, just like other people came in. And the whole thing began to suffer. Because there was a moment when nobody wanted to do anything else. Right now, you do a record and you know it's going to be pirated. So you're doing it because you love it. But, and again, if only fans would take it. But the fact that somebody actually has a company where they come and they forge and falsify everything and then put it out there, and there's a guy out there selling it for $5 or $10, and it's your work, and you're not making a penny, but some guy is doing it. That's not right. So I'm also going to see how this works, because I'd rather give it away. And if I see somebody selling it, I swear to God, I'd pick a bat and break their arms, because it shouldn't be done that way. And they come and they tell you that they're having trouble. I mean, what do you mean having? Well, then there's no law and there's no consideration. You don't base your happiness on someone else's unhappiness. That's like a street rule. You don't cross the ones you love, the ones you need. Yeah. So what are you telling me? So basically, we'll see what happens with this. But in Puerto Rico is the only place where this album is being sold, because it's a. I dedicated this record to Cuba, and I said, you know, I'm against the blockade and I'm against the dictatorship. So they are. I really admire the Cuban people. I mean, they've been able to survive in spite of getting hit from the outside and getting hit from the inside. And plus, the background. It's at least what I got. You know, that's why I went for the song. Although I put on a conga, and song doesn't have conga, but I put it in. Anyway, that's my version as far as I left the timbales out. My urban take on it. And the Puerto Rico angle, because, like I said, Imael Rivera, Tite Curé, Rey Barreto, Willy Colón, Eddie Palmieri, everybody you can imagine, Roberto Roena, Richie Ray, you know, they're all friends, all people who helped me, Papo Luca, tanta gente, Bobby Valentin, so many guys. So it's for Puerto Rico, and after December, I'm taking it out. And I'm changing the covers. I'm changing covers in every country. No country is going to get the same cover, the same colors, or the same scenario. And Puerto Rican, Puerto Rico, la dedicación, la dedicatoria a Puerto Rico is for Puerto Rico, and that's it. This album is being sold. I understand people are taking it. I really appreciate that. I give you my thanks for your support, and not just me, but every musician that thanks you for supporting our production, our work, we'll see what happens. I mean, my dream is to sell 100,000 copies of this. Not just because, oh, he's gonna make money. You know, it's not the issue. You know, the issue was just money. I would have never quit my job for 5 years to go serve somewhere else. You know, it doesn't work that way, but it would help the industry as far as musicians and writers to know that there is consideration outside from the fans and from the people who value what we do and understand that we all live off this. So I really thank everybody. Del corazón le doy las gracias a todas las personas que nos están apoyando, or everybody who's helping us with this. Quiero también otra vez dar las gracias a Puerto Rico por el apoyo que nos dieron con los dos conciertos. Fue espectacular. It was Puerto Rico's support has always been very invaluable, very precious for us. So on behalf of all my peers and mi amigo, mi gente de Son del Solar, Sello Solar, and the band and all the technicians and everyone, thank you, gracias. And we hope we'll be able to make it around there in Boston. Really hope to be able to go there. It's a great show. It is a really good show. So we'll see. Muchas gracias, José. Tu felicidades que estás cumpliendo cuando 34 años. 34 years, and the reason again that you've been 34 years is that people respect and like what you do. Otherwise, you don't last 34 hours. Lo mismo digo yo. Muchas gracias a todos. Thank you so much.
Gracias a ti, Rubén. Rubén Blades, invitado especial aquí en Con Salsa.
Gracias a Luba Mason, Rubén Blades, allá en Panamá, Orozmán, a la Guardia y David Bianco, de la página de rubenblades.com. A todos ustedes que están en sintonía, gracias por sintonizar. Será el próximo fin de semana, si os permite, cuando estaremos nuevamente con ustedes, otra edición de su programa Con Salsa. Hasta entonces, que Dios os bendiga a todos. Thank you so much for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed the program. It was my pleasure bringing it to you. 2 weekends of Rubén Blades, his new CD, and some of the music from his current tour, Todos Vuelven. He's back after 5 years of public service for his homeland, Panama, as Minister of Tourism. I want to thank Luba Mason and Rubén Blades for their generosity and their time and hospitality in making it possible for me to do this interview. And to Orozmán de la Guardia and David Bianco in Panama, RubénBlades.com, I want to thank them as well. And Allison Weinstock from MaestraVida.com as well. And to all of you, we'll be back next week, and God willing, 10 p.m. with the very best in Appalachian music every Saturday night from 10 till 3 o'clock in the morning on Sunday. I'm José Maso. This is Con Salsa. Boss.
Boston University. This is 90.9 WBUR FM Boston and 1240 WBUR AM West Yarmouth. Also broadcasting 91.5 WSA Sandwich and 90.3 WCCT Harwich, WBUR Boston, Cape Cod, and the Islands, and worldwide at WBUR.org.